It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today to the Todd Leonard Show, Journey of Giving Back. I have a great honor today. We're going to be talking with Roger Kaiser of the 11th Hour Rescue, whose passion is to help pets, dogs and cats, have a second chance in life. And we're going to explore with Roger all the wonderful things that his organization, 11th Hour Rescue, does. For many, many years, we're going to talk about Linda Schiller, the late founder, her passion to save dogs and cats, and really to this very day carries on. We're going to talk about Daniel, the miracle beagle who was saved from a gassing in Alabama. We're going to go on a journey with Roger, and we're going to talk about all the wonderful volunteers. And if you like our show, please go on Facebook and like and subscribe. If you want to send me an email, you know someone giving back, helping out, send an email to the Todd at ToddLeonardShow.com. And please subscribe to us on YouTube. Good morning, Roger. How are you doing today?
Great, Todd. Thank you very much. I'm doing great, and thank you for having us on the show. I really appreciate it.
You know, it's a great honor. You know, MK, the engineer at WM2R 1250 AM, loves you and the 11th Hour Rescue.
She's great. She's always been nice. She's always been very upbeat and pleasant. She's a real cat lady, you know, so it's nice to have a cat lover in the audience. And also a big thank you to WMTR. They've been great supporters of 11th Hour Rescue for many years as well. So always appreciate that support.
Yeah, it's wonderful. You know, MK does a great job here, and I bring on so many wonderful people in the community, really throughout our great country. And when I told her, you're coming on, she lit up. Oh, my God. She was thrilled. So
it's great.
Shout out to MK. And you know, I want to say, as I was getting ready for the show, Roger, I was struck by all the dedicated volunteers that have made such a big difference. And that's what the show is about, is those in the community, wherever they are, coming together and making a difference and making the world better. And today we're going to be talking about pets, cats, dogs. I mean, you know, I recently got a pet. Shout out to the German Shepherd, little pup. My wife right now is taking the dog for a walk, and it's a labor of love, but I understand more and more about the power of the pets. So, Roger, on the journey of giving back, I take our guests on a journey in their own lives and kind of where they are, you know, when they got involved in helping others. So, Roger, if you'll permit, where are you from?
All right, so Long Valley. I've been a resident there for 34 years. Before that, I lived in Berkeley Heights, but I really grew up in New Providence, right on Springfield Avenue, you know, the main drag.
Yeah, I grew up in Springfield, so I'm a Union County guy, too. So shout out to the Union County residents, but you're also here now in Morris County, a wonderful county. So I understand that you got involved in the 11th Hour Rescue in 2009.
Correct.
And I understand that in getting ready for the show, you obviously had a pet, Honey?
Honey, yep, right. Golden Retriever.
Right. And, you know, once again, when I bring guests on, everybody has a different story. Everybody's on their own journey. I love talking about the journey of giving back because, really, when you go through life, things happen. You have to figure out how to keep on going and deal with some issues. And since we're talking about cats and dogs today, dogs and cats, and shout out my paralegal, Claudia, Lydia the cat, and I believe my paralegal Stacy has Moose. So there's a lot of cat and dog lovers, and Paul actually in my office recently got a dog as well. So even within my own office, a lot of dog and cat lovers.
Terrific.
So since we're talking about cats and dogs, when did you first have a pet?
So, I, you know, just growing up, we always had pets in the house. We always had dogs and cats. My dad was a big dog lover and cat lover. And I can't remember a time growing up when we didn't have a pet. When I was probably 2 or 3 years old, we got our first dog in the family, a Cocker Spaniel, Honeybee. She was a fabulous dog. She lived a nice long life. But along the way, we had some other dogs and cats. Always had cats. And at one point in our life, we had two pregnant mama cats, and they both delivered within a week. So we all of a sudden took our cat population from 2 to 14. They both had pretty decent-sized litters. So that was an experience to have an explosion of kittens running around the house.
It's a lot of cats.
It's a lot of cats.
So what'd you do with all those cats?
Well, back in the day, you know, I'm old enough to say this, you know, you whenever you had the free puppies, the free kittens, you took them in the box down to the grocery store and you know, you just gave them out, right? That's what we did. Well, we lived right on Springfield Avenue. I said that. Main drag. I went out and put up a sign on the tree, free kittens. By the time I put the first sign up and walked back in the house, a car had already pulled in the driveway looking for a free kitten. And so I put the second sign, and within 2 days, 12 little kittens all went to homes, and hopefully good homes. You know, back then, there were no questions asked. It was just, oh, you show up, you want a kitten? Here, have a kitten. You want two? Here, take two kittens. Life is much different now. Certainly in the world of rescues and shelters, we have application processes, and it's a much more involved process, and the whole idea of free kittens at the grocery store doesn't really exist anymore.
No, that's interesting, and I do recall, since we're somewhat contemporaries, you're right. I mean, that's kind of how it was. If someone had cats or dogs, a litter, and they could obviously put a sign up, and there you go, and people would obviously take the cats and dogs. And I know there's been an evolution. You think it's better or worse now with the evolution of all the processes involved?
Yeah. You know, pros and cons, like a lot of things, right? The con is you've certainly slowed the process down and you've put up some barriers to success, right? There's some headwinds along the way. So that's the con. The pro is, you know, we vet people. You know, we have conversations with them. We have an application process, both cats, dogs, and we also do rabbits and guinea pigs, too, by the way.
Rabbits and guinea pigs.
They're kind of by accident, and so, you know, we don't have to go down that path. I suppose someday we'll be doing goats and chickens. Who the hell knows? But so we have an application process, and that way gives us an opportunity to learn more about the adopter. Tell us about your home life. Tell us about your family life. Tell us how long the pet's going to be left alone during the day. Just to kind of get some guidelines as to, you know, what your lifestyle is, so we get a right pet, right fit, and, you know, we have much better success that way.
So you're already diving into the, and you had a little pun on words, the vet. You got to vet the applicants, and obviously because we're talking pets, you got to get the vet involved too. So that was actually a pun.
Yes, it was.
Pretty quick. On a Sunday morning.
Honestly, not bad. I had my cup of coffee.
Thank you, sir. So did I, actually. So, and thank you for, you know, saying that. I was a little dressed up for the Sunday morning, but
Cash.
My listeners and viewers, yeah, I try to look good as best I can. So we were just talking about your late dog, Honey, which you had. And sadly, you lost your dog. And I understand because of that loss, you wanted to do something, right, to kind of just fill the void. Is that how you got involved in the 11th Hour Rescue?
So that's my story, and it's not a story that's unique. A lot of us in the rescue world have come into it because we lost a pet. Now, let me just talk about Honey for a second. She was a golden retriever. We bought her from a backyard breeder, which now I know is like a terrible thing to do because of all the animals that are in shelters around the country that just need to be saved. But I didn't know any better at that time. So a backyard breeder, she a golden retriever, 7 years she passed with cancer, not an unusual thing for a golden and not an unusual thing for a backyard breeder who's not paying attention to, you know, the DNA history of the dogs that they're breeding. So that was unfortunate. But Honey was this most wonderful, special, super dog in the world. She was a great family pet. And we had her when my son was young, so my son grew up with her as well. You know, every boy needs that puppy to grow up with. So she was such a wonderful dog. When she passed, I wasn't ready to replace her. I was still grieving. And I had run across 11th Hour Rescue at various events around town and the area. And 11th Hour Rescue always looked like they had their stuff together. They seemed to be organized. They seemed to be big. They seemed to be having fun. Some of these events you'd look at, you'd go to, and some of the other rescues were sort of detached. They didn't, like, seem to want to engage the public as you walked. Well, 11th Hour Rescue did. So I just decided I'm going to jump in and join 11th Hour Rescue. I'm going to be a volunteer. I'm going to foster dogs. And I went in with eyes wide open, having no particular preconceived notion as to what was going to happen down this journey. And it's a journey, as you mentioned. So I got my first dog. Her name was Georgia, and she was this black lab. She's a very sweet dog. Now, you know, I joined 11th Hour Rescue more selfishly, right? I'm dealing with my own grief to overcome that. And so I wanted to be around dogs, so that's why I jumped in. So I get this first foster, Georgia, super sweet black lab. Within 10 days, I've taken her to some adoption events. She meets a woman. Just looking at that woman, you could tell pretty quickly she was suffering a loss. And so the conversation started, and yes, she had just lost her dog, and she wanted to get another dog right away. And Georgia, my foster, bonded with her instantly at this event, which is, like, great to see. And so, boom, contract, you know. Well, then it's in my mindset that, you know, okay, it's about me, but it's really about the dogs and the cats. And so you take the bigger picture view of what's going on. You foster a dog, you get him adopted, go pick another one. Foster a dog, get him acclimated, get him transitioned into home life, get him adopted, go get, you know, it's like shampoo, you know, lather, rinse, repeat. You just kind of keep doing it over and over again. And the impact you start to have is measurable. It's not just one dog, it becomes a bunch of dogs. And I'm one volunteer, but you explode it out to all the volunteers we have and everybody doing what they're doing. It does make an impact. We're saving dogs and cats' lives who would otherwise be euthanized at overkill shelters. Or put down locally here, and we're at the happy end of a very tough business.
Well, that was something that was also striking as I was getting ready. You know, I was so impressed by the late Linda Schiller. You know, what I understood was that Linda had, you know, got involved, founded the organization in the 2000s, had found out about a calamity in Georgia. There were 20, you know, pets that had to be saved. They're going to be euthanized, and she said, "I'm going to take them all." And what I loved was the spirit and passion. As I was reading more about her, I was like, oh, my God. And I saw the pictures of Linda and how much she adored the pets and all the joy she brought. And I know she lost, sadly, a battle of pancreatic cancer on October 31st, 2020. Tell us more, because obviously you worked hand in fist with Linda Schiller. And once again, you know, my deepest condolences. I wish I met her. Tell us about Linda.
Well, she's a very special lady, and the story you're talking about is really one of the early stories of 11th Hour Rescue and how it really got started. And we actually call that story the Nobody Dies Today story, you know, internally. And it kind of goes like this. Now, to back up a little bit before that, she worked in an urban setting, an industrial complex kind of a place, and she noticed stray dogs coming around all the time, skinny, drinking out of oily puddles, you know, just terrible. So she started to befriend them. She'd go out and share her lunch with these dogs and started to make friends with them and actually took a couple of them home and actually got them transitioned and got them adopted. And so once she started doing that, all of her friends started listening to what she's doing, and so they started sending suggestions her way. And one of them suggested, oh, my God, there's this shelter in Georgia that's full, and they're going to have to put dogs down. That's not a one-time event, by the way. That's a continuing event. It happens every day, all the time. It just, this one person happened to know about this one shelter, so was able to connect Linda up. In that regards, still millions of dogs and cats are put down every year for overcrowding purposes. So, you know, we're still going, and we got more work to go. But going back to that story, so she calls the shelter manager at the shelter in Georgia and says, what does it take to pull a dog, you know, pull dogs and, you know, get them out and give you some relief? He says you have to have a kennel license and hangs up on her. Now, Linda is a person who passion, compassion, and never taking no for an answer were like that. That's her, you know, in a nutshell. So she calls back and says, how do I get a license? And you know, he's not talking to her. Hangs up. Well, she takes that challenge on. She tells her boss right then and there, hey, boss, I'm on vacation. Okay, I'm going to be here in your office using your phones, using your computer. I'm on vacation. If you need me, come bug me, but I got a mission to do. And the boss, what's the mission? He brought into it right away, and so he, you know, helped her out a lot there in the beginning. So she starts making phone calls of shelters and rescues in Georgia, saying, trying to tell her story, trying to get somebody to let her use their license. She finally finds somebody. You know, they're going to trust her. They're going to take a chance on her. So she calls the shelter manager back. By the way, I've told the story 1,000 times, and I never get through it without getting all teared up here, so I'm going to try to power through this story. But she calls the shelter manager back and says, okay, here's my license. And the guy says, okay, which dog do you want? And she says, I want them all. The shelter manager yells out to the staff, "Nobody dies today." You know, big cheers and applause. And then she and her boss rent the van. They go down and pick up the dogs, bring them back to New Jersey, get them all settled in, and get them all adopted. And that's really the real start of 11th Hour Rescue right there. She worked out of her home in the beginning, mostly her basement, and she did adoptions in her backyard until we got our facility in Randolph, which was right on Route 10. We subsequently moved out of that into a more permanent home. But it's that compassion and passion of hers, and that I'm not going to take no for an answer, that really got instilled in the organization. Yes, she's passed, but we're a bunch of volunteers that are type A personalities, a lot of us. So we just inherently don't take no for an answer, and we always look for solutions. And lots of times, that first no, you don't have to take it seriously, because there might be an alternate solution, there might be a way out of it. And a lot of that comes from Linda's legacy.
Yep, you know, that is the beauty of the late Linda Schiller, and I hear the passion in your voice because you carry on. All your wonderful volunteers at 11th Hour Rescue don't take no for an answer. They keep on going, and they honor that tradition of doing their very best to save the cats and dogs. And that's the reality, right? 11th Hour Rescue is, if they're not rescued, many of these, unfortunately, have nowhere to go, and they could be euthanized, which is a horrible...
And we earn that name, 11th Hour Rescue, every day. You know, a lot of times with rescues, well, let's kind of just talk about where our dogs come from for a second. So there's shelters all over the country, and we have shelter partners around the country as well. A lot of them are in the South, but not exclusively. So those shelters, take the dogs in. They need rescues to help come and pull the dogs out to alleviate some of their overcrowding that they have. And we work with a lot of those shelters that are very limited in resources. The shelter might only have 20 spots available, and that shelter does intake. You know, they take all the strays that the animal control officers and police have to pick up along the way. So they're frequently full. The job of rescues is to come in and help alleviate that overcrowding, pull some dogs out, and get them adopted. But the shelters we work with, they have local rescue partners that they work with, and so a lot of their dogs can go right there locally. But when it comes down to the 11th hour, you know, we're on the list of who they're going to contact, and we have some regular relationships where we pull dogs on a very scheduled, regular basis from those shelters around the country.
Well, I mean, that's so important. I mean, I can see your just devotion and commitment to really save as many pets as you can. You and all, like I said, the wonderful volunteers. But what's really inspiring to me as I'm learning about the 11th Hour Rescue and about folks like you, Roger, and God bless you and all the volunteers, is the fact that Linda, the late founder, didn't take no for an answer. And that type of commitment, and I see that with you and getting ready for the show, you know, you're modest. You fostered over 30 pets as well, which is a lot. I mean, I only use my own life as an example. Just going through the last month or two with Shadow is quite a workout. And you've done that over 30 times. I know some of your wonderful volunteers has as well. One of the things that I want to go over is the difference between a rescue and a shelter. And what are the differences?
And that's an important point to make. So a shelter, they do intake. They have contracts with the local municipalities, governments, and so strays that are picked up by the police or the animal control officers, that's where they're going to go. If owners want to dump them on their doorstep, they have to take the intake. Right? That's the rule for a shelter. And so with limited resources, and again, I go back to one of the shelters we deal with in South Carolina. It does a whole county, and it only has slots for 20 dogs. And on any given day, when they drive into the shelter to open up for the morning, they go down this dirt road to get there. And on the side of the road, they're looking for the animals that were dumped overnight or tied up to a tree or that box of puppies. It's like an everyday thing. So they're pulling in these animals left and right in a very limited space. But a shelter has to take those dogs in. That's their agreement with the towns. A rescue comes along and helps those shelters take some of the dogs out and relieve some of the overcrowding so they don't have to euthanize. And then rescue's responsibility is to go get those dogs adopted, get them vetted, get them set. So some of our partners around the country, which is mostly like Texas, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky. We do have some in Ohio. We also work with international groups. We took some dogs from Kosovo. We've taken some dogs just recently from Puerto Rico and also Bahamas. So we're getting dogs from everywhere, if you will, getting them here in New Jersey, get all the vetting that they need, rabies shots, regular vetting, dewormers, all the normal type stuff, and then any extraordinary stuff they might need as well. Some of them have lumps and cancers and leg injuries and stuff that they need. So we're going to do all that work to get that dog ready to go into their home life. But that difference between shelters and rescues, a lot of times those terms just get blended together, and that's fine. Because you know what? If you wanted a dog, you could go to the shelter to get a dog. You could also go to a rescue to get a dog. There's differences. The shelter may not have done all the vetting that the dog or cat needs. We're going to do that. We're going to make sure that animal is spayed and neutered before he gets adopted, or shortly thereafter. We'll make all those arrangements. But, you know, the two organizations, and you, hopefully you have good synergy between the shelter and the rescues. There are some shelters that really stay out. We don't want you. They're going to do what they're going to do. But you really look, as a rescue, you really look for the shelters that welcome the help in overcoming their overcrowded situation and getting those dogs and cats out. And most of our cats are local, so most of our cats are not coming from shelters. They're mostly street cats. There's a lot of cats are just running loose, and you know, apartment complexes and shopping, and the owners don't always want the cats running around loose. So they might want to put the cats down. Well, we want to step in at the 11th hour in some cases, pull those cats out, get them all set up for adoption, and get them going from there.
So if the listeners or viewers that are watching on Facebook want to contact 11th Hour Rescue, how do they do that?
Well, everything's on our website. So it's www.ehr, for 11th Hour Rescue, ehrdogs.org. And that'll get you to our website. And really, everything's there. All of our dogs, our cats, our guinea pigs and rabbits are all listed on the website, as well as applications to adopt, applications to be a volunteer, ways to donate. I can talk about more donation a little bit later. And volunteer applications are there as well. So that's really a good place to start. We have a phone number. It's our main office, 973-664-0865, but it's not manned by any live operator. It goes right to voicemail. You leave your message. We figure out who's the right resource to get that message to, and someone will contact you back probably within 24 hours. It's not going to be an instant callback situation. So the website's really a great place to go, but also Facebook. We are very active on Facebook. If you haven't liked us on Facebook, start following us now, and Instagram as well. We do all kinds of posting about activities going on very aggressively on Facebook and Instagram. So that's a good way to stay in touch with us as well.
No question about it. That's why I was learning so much about your organization, visiting the Facebook page, doing some research, the proud history of not only Linda and you and so many wonderful board members and these volunteers. It's really touching to see their commitment. What are some of the misconceptions? Because, you know, obviously people may think it's, you know, the animals are coming, you know, they're damaged, you know, they're not going to be healthy. I'm going to end up getting a cat or dog. I'm going to spend thousands of dollars at the vet. What kind of misconceptions are there, Roger?
Well, first of all, that can happen because we can't guarantee the health of any pet coming in unless they've been with us for an extended period of time. We might have only had the dog or cat for 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. So we can't certify that they are 100% healthy. However, if something happens to that animal soon after adoption, contact us. We have great vetting partners. The vetting partners we have bend over backwards to help us. They recognize what we're doing. We really appreciate those vetting partners helping us out. They give us great discounts. They'll give us some freebies along the way. It's a really good relationship. Well, let me back up, though, to your question, which was...
just the misconceptions.
The misconceptions. Yeah. So one of the biggest misconceptions is the animal's damaged, right? The dog ended up in the shelter world. He must be damaged. And that's true for some of our pets.
Something like that, like physical or emotional.
Physical or emotional, exactly. most of our pets, by far the majority of our pets, are ready to go right now. No issues, nothing. We have some that have behavior problems. We have some that have medical problems. But basically, they're really ready to go. But that misconception is they must be damaged. In fact, I had a foster. I took him to an event, a local town festival. The dog is this cute little dog. Dog is laying on his back, and he's getting belly rubs by like a half a dozen teenagers all bit around. And the dad comes over and says to me, gee, it doesn't seem like that dog is damaged. And that was the first day. This was fairly early on. And I didn't have that misconception, but obviously some members of the public do. And it kind of took me back a little bit. What do you mean damaged? No, this was just a dog. Found us a stray. He had no home. He was running around loose someplace. Picked him up, went through the system, and here he is in New Jersey. So, again, that misconception that they're damaged is really not true. Although, again, I have some damaged dogs and cats. If you want a three-legged dog with an enlarged goiter and, you know, one ear, I probably have a dog that fits that mold, so, you know, we can do that. Some of our dogs, too, have gone through some trauma. And so when you bring them into your home, there's a transition period. Right? So that transition period, dogs or cats, it could be 3 hours, 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months. My current dog took her about a year and a half to transition into being an almost normal dog. If we have time later, I can talk about my Gracie.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, like, on our Facebook page for the Todd Leonard Show, I have a beautiful picture of you.
She's a beautiful
Gracie.
Dog.
Oh, my goodness.
She's an English cream golden retriever. She's a purebred. Again, she's got a crazy backstory. So if we have time later in the broadcast...
You are loquacious. I have to say, all I have to do is just ask you a question, and you go off to the races, if I may. Off to the kennel.
Well, off to the kennel. So, you know, going back to those misconceptions, there is that transition process. Could be 3 weeks, three hours, three weeks. Every dog's different. The dogs I fostered, and by the way, I'm a lightweight when it comes to fostering. Yeah, I did 30 dogs, big deal. We have fosters who have done 200, 300, 400 dogs or cats in this process if they've been around long enough. So I don't foster anymore. I got more involved in the back end of the business. But when I did foster, yeah, I was in the right foster mindset, which is get a dog or cat, bring him into your house, get them all acclimated and transitioned for that adoption. Take them to events. Get them publicized. Share them on your Facebook page yourself. Get that dog or cat promoted. Get them adopted. And then go pick another one.
I have a question about that because I had the great privilege of having some folks on from the Seeing Eye right in Morristown.
Love them.
Wonderful organization.
Love them, yep.
Okay. And what was striking to me is that so many wonderful people in the communities will foster these incredibly gifted animals, the dogs, and they can part with the animal, the dog, even though, you know, there's a huge attachment. What's it like when you start to foster a pet, you're like, because they become part of your family, to say goodbye, you know, you're going to go to another family?
So first of all, there are some of my fosters I was really happy when they got adopted. Okay. They weren't a good fit for my lifestyle. So that's always there. But yes, they're, it's hard to let them go. But you have to be in that foster mindset of get that dog adopted, go get another one, go do it again. You know, just it's that hamster wheel of just keep going, because the more you do, the more lives you save. If there's a foster that doesn't have a current foster, we could have pulled one more dog somewhere. We could have saved one more life somewhere and made a difference. You know, you don't make a difference for the millions that are going to get put down, but you made a difference for that one dog or that one cat.
Right. Well, and that's, you know, obviously that's the importance. If you just save one cat or dog, you're really changing so many wonderful things in that animal's life and also the family's life. We're going to take a short break, and at the next part of the show, I got to talk about Daniel the Miracle Beagle.
Absolutely. Okay?
We'll be right back in 30 seconds with Roger Kaiser from the 11th Hour Rescue.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
Welcome back. We have Roger Kaiser, 11th Hour Rescue, saving thousands and thousands of cats and dogs for many, many years. Roger, we were just talking about, before this segment, about the fostering process, and that, you know, obviously there's an attachment. And obviously you also mentioned early on about the fit between someone who's going to, you know, opt to adopt, and whether or not it would make sense for that family. And the same thing with fostering a pet. You get to know the pet. So I know you were just kind of an intermission talking about, you know, the fostering process. What other, you know, kind of anecdotal story do you have?
So one mistake I made about fostering and getting the dog adopted is I get the dog adopted. I'm going to hang back to my car. I made the mistake of turning around and looking in the window. And here's the foster in the window looking for me. Now, he ended up transitioning great to the adopters. They're fabulous adopters. It was perfect. But never make that mistake of turning around and looking, because if that dog's looking for you, it's just, oh, my heart.
Oh, you saw the paws come out?
Right, yeah. In the window. There's the dog in the window. So, you know, I developed a habit of comfort food. After my dog got adopted, I'd run to Dunkin' Donuts and get myself a nice chocolate-covered donut to you know, kind of get over the, I just lost my foster. But the fostering process is really critical. It's a huge step because it gets that dog or cat acclimated to living in a home. And that's an important step for whoever's going to adopt it. You know, a dog living at the kennel won't really appear that adoptable necessarily, because they're in that kennel mindset. You want to get them out of the kennel, get them in a home, get them settled in. That's a big step for that transition to getting adopted.
Right. So, you know, there's so many wonderful stories, and I want to just touch on a little bit about Daniel the Miracle Beagle, because when I was getting ready for the show, I didn't know about the story. And, you know, for the listeners, this is quite a story. Please, you know, pay attention to Daniel the Miracle Beagle. Tell us about the story, the backstory.
So it's a crazy story. And part of it is, by the way, rescues are all communicating behind the scenes. There's like an underground railway of communication between various rescues. So we heard about this dog, Alabama, overcrowded kill shelter. It was the day to put them all down, so they load them up in the gas chamber, which unfortunately they were still using gas chambers back then, which is a horrible way for a dog or cat to die. It's painful. It's not quick. It's terrible. But they load these dogs in this gas chamber. They turn the gas on. They wait the appropriate time. They open the door up. And here's this beagle wagging his tail. At least that's the story told by the ACO who was doing the work. And he had a heart. A lot of them, this is not a completely rare story. It's happened. It's pretty darn rare. But he pulled the dog out. We heard about it. We said, we're going to help this dog. So we made arrangements to get him flown up here to New Jersey with Fly Pups, Pilots and Paws, great organization. I got to meet the animals at Caldwell Airport when they flew in. And here's this beagle. He's just happy as could be. Doesn't seem to have any side effects from the gassing. He must have found an air pocket to tuck himself into. He lived. That's why we gave him the name Daniel. Extraordinary circumstance. And so we got him up here in New Jersey, and we then started the process of who's going to be worthy to adopt this dog. Now, the story went international. We were getting contacts from Australia, Japan, all over the United States, Canada. They all wanted to adopt this dog because obviously he was special. Well, we found somebody local here in New Jersey who took on the task of what our intent was with this dog, and that is, let's not use this dog for fundraising purposes, because that would be an easy out. Let's use this dog to promote stopping gas chambers in the United States. And immediately thereafter, Alabama stopped using the gas chamber. Yay. Locally here in this area in Pennsylvania, Senator Dinneman, who's now retired, he heard about the case, and he's a big dog lover. And so he took on the task of banning gas chambers in Pennsylvania. We did a rally. We took Daniel to the rally in Pennsylvania, and he pushed it through his legislature. And now so Pennsylvania has banned the gas chamber for euthanization as well. So this adopter has gone on promoting this dog for this purpose. The dog actually appeared in the Rose Bowl parade one year. He had his own little section of a float. But the adopter did a great job of, let's put out a map of the United States. Here's all the states that still do gassing. Let's start attacking them one after a time. And he's had some success. So that's really important.
You know, also what's really striking is how many people have pets? There's, you know, millions and millions.
Don't we all?
I'd rather like 68% of the people in the United States have a pet. I was like, wow, that's a lot of pet lovers. And that's why when I heard you were coming on, I know the passion you have for the animals, the pets, the dogs, the cats. We'll throw in the rabbits, the guinea pigs, too. I haven't really prepared for that. So
yeah. Neither have I. I could do away with
that. I don't want the listeners upset if I get an email, Todd, what happened? I got 10 rabbits. I don't want the rabbits to be left out of it.
The rabbits don't have a lawyer. You're okay.
Well, thankfully, not yet at least. I also read just about Daniel Joe Dyer, the adopter. The dog actually was on Anderson Cooper. I mean, this is an example, though, of one, your organization opening the eyes up to the world, because it put the attention on the horrible processes when a kill shelter is going to put a dog or cat, they're going to end the lives of these beautiful animals, how inhumane it is. And that's the humanity of the 11th Hour Rescue, giving 11th Hour a second chance. So once again, God bless all the volunteers. And that's what I want to talk about is the folks you've come in contact with, the volunteers. Because it takes folks like you, Roger, right?
Yep.
I understand you're retired, except that this is a full-time job, right?
It is a full-time job. It was a full-time job when I was working. I don't know how I ever managed my home-life balance. But yes, I'm still fully heavily involved in 11th Hour, and I still have a skewed home-life balance because of it as well.
Well, I know you have your wife, Terry, you have four kids, and you have a lot of responsibilities. And this goes back to why I love doing the show. Bring people like you on. Just people doing the right thing, right? You were very busy in your professional life. You still found time to volunteer. You're retired, but I know in getting ready, too, you're doing 40, 45 hours at least a week for the 11th Hour Rescue.
Yep.
Why are you so passionate? Why are you and the volunteers so passionate about 11th Hour Rescue?
Well, you know, it's a big group. We have well over 200 active volunteers. Our actual volunteer pool is bigger, but in terms of active volunteers, it's 200, over 200. So there's a lot of people like me doing this. And if I go to any event or any of our facilities at any point in time, I'll see groups of people, you know, volunteers. They're there doing what they're doing, and it's a lot of times the same group, and others keep joining in as well. So it's really fun. It actually is fun and very rewarding to do what we're doing, because you know you're having a direct impact on the dogs and the cats. Well, we always have an expression we use that, you know, we rescue dogs and save people. Well, you could save people and rescue dogs. You can play it either way. And, you know, that's true about the people side, whether you're an adopter or a volunteer. So a lot of the volunteers really fulfill their life by being a volunteer at 11th Hour Rescue. Not that it just gives them something to do, but it's because they're a dog, they're an animal lover, and they want to help any way they can. And a lot of the volunteers aren't directly touching dogs and cats. We have a thrift shop at the Roxbury Mall. The people that run the thrift shop, they're volunteers. They're not working with dogs and cats. They're selling thrift shop items. It's been very successful. We have a lot of back office people doing things like applications and working on fundraising activities that, again, are not necessarily front line with the dogs and the cats, but they know what the impact is for the work that you're doing. There's so many moving parts that keep this organization going. It wasn't like that in the very beginning. It was pretty small. I wore a lot of hats in the very beginning. But then as you grow, all the extra volunteers come on board and help spread the wealth of all the work that we do. Again, I'm not unique in my passion. I am just one of many who are deeply passionate.
I mean, there's no question, Roger. There's an army of volunteers. I could just tell the scope and breadth of how the 11th Hour Rescue have saved thousands and thousands of dogs and cats, I mean, to the organization's credit. I also, obviously, to run an organization, it takes money. So I read it's like $250,000 just to basically with the vet fees and, you know, doing what you need to get the animals, the cats, the dogs. How do you raise all this money?
So we have an adoption fee, but that adoption fee only covers a portion of the total cost. So that puts a big burden on fundraising. And fundraising has a couple different aspects to it. We run fundraising events. We just had one recently. It was a murder mystery dinner. You know, it wasn't an adoption event. It was just a fundraising event. So we sold it out. We typically sell out our events like that. And people pay a fee to come. We feed them food and we entertain them with a murder mystery, you know, professional murder mystery group. It was a fun night. So we do a lot of those type events. We have coming up in the summer, we have our ice cream social, which will be
ice cream, by the way.
Well, so do the dogs. So this is ice cream for people and for the dogs.
Oh, really?
So it's at Horseshoe Lake. It'll be in August. We have Puptoberfest, which is by far our biggest event of the year.
You're telling me the dogs and cats are having beer.
No. It's a non-alcoholic.
I got worried. I'm sorry.
Well, although some of the volunteers would like that.
I would imagine they might.
So Puptoberfest is a big event. Also at Horseshoe Lake, it's going to be September 30th this year. We typically draw in 5,000 people for this event. It's a bring your dog event. So if your dog is friendly with people and other dogs, bring them to that event. And then we have our Winter Wonderland event in the Sussex County Fairgrounds coming up in December. So those are major fundraising events, but continually all the time, we're always doing fundraising type activities. Whether it's associated with an adoption event or a standalone, we're just actively always doing stuff. We need those dollars to continue doing what we're doing. And donations can take on two flavors. One is pure money. I always love money. But also supplies. On our website, ehrdogs.org, right, website, we have our wish list. We have a wish list for dogs and a wish list for cats. So we get a lot of good supplies donated to us, which really alleviates the money outlays that we need to put out. We get covered usually fairly well for dog food. Unfortunately, cat people, if you're listening, cat people, we typically don't get enough cat food and we have to buy cat food. So cat people, hey, how about donating some cat food to 11th Hour Rescue? Check out the website. Again, ehrdogs.org. Look for our wish list and anything you can do to donate. Again, money's great and supplies are great as well. You know, in a trivial basis, we spend a lot of money just on paper towels. You know, we use a lot of regular towels and we wash them, but paper towels are good to prevent spread of diseases and stuff. So cleaning supplies, bleaches, laundry detergent, you know, all the mundane things that go into just running a kennel facility are things that if we don't get them donated, we have to go buy them.
So let me ask you this, Roger. For the listeners, the viewers, folks that may listen later on the YouTube or whatever, however they get our podcast, and they want to go and check out a cat or dog, because there's going to be some cat and dog lovers that are like, you know, I'm going to go to 11th Hour Rescue, because as I recall, in preparation, it's like for a dog under the age of 6 months, it's like a $450 fee. Do I recall that correctly?
Yep.
Right? So if someone's listening, they want to get more of a pup, where do they go? Where's the actual kennel now? I know you mentioned it. I know it changed from Randolph on Route 10, which I would pass regularly. Where's it, in Flanders now?
It's in Flanders now. So this is an important thing to understand, too. We have several facilities in play. So our main kennel facility is in Flanders, just down the road from the Turkey Brook Park, which is a, you know, popular park in Flanders. But the kennel is not open to the public. It's by appointment only. You couldn't just show up and say, hey, show me a dog. Puppies, by the way, are not at the kennel. They're all in foster. So a second facility we have is our Roxbury Mall storefront. It's right next to GameStop and Dollar Tree, right in between. And we hold adoption events on the weekends. Saturdays we do dogs, Sundays we do cats and kittens. So if you're thinking about it, there you could just walk in, see a dog or cat, and proceed with the adoption process from there. Our third location is the Rockaway Mall. So Rockaway Mall, lower level, right outside Sears. We took over a puppy mill store that was there many years ago. You might remember it if you ever went to the Rockaway Mall.
Yeah.
You might remember the puppy mill store that was there.
Yeah.
They're long gone, thank goodness.
Not a lot of love between the organization and the former, let's say, the person that was, or the entity, if I may.
Yeah, not a lot of love. So we took over that facility, and that's our cat adoption center. So you could walk in any day during business hours and see adult cats that are available. Now, there's only a handful. Our cat population right now is 200. We have 200 cats and kittens under our care. At the Rockaway Mall, there might only be a dozen. So everything else is online, and dogs, all online. So if you go online, you can see dogs, you can see cats. I'll give one more last shout-out to the rabbits and the guinea pigs. But cats and dogs, that's where you go. Go to a website.
Represented. These rabbits and guinea pigs, let's just say you leave no stone unturned taking attention to those animals.
So just jump on the website, ehrdogs.org, and check out dogs, cats.
So one of the things that I also found interesting, hopefully the listeners as well, is the benefits of having a cat or dog in the house, because I can only talk from my own firsthand experience. I have a fairly demanding practice local, and I know when I come home and I'm outside with our dog now, number one, it gets me outside. And it's just the exercise, getting outside in the air early in the morning sometimes or late at night. There's something refreshing. Something about the mood just changes, right? And I also am blessed with two young boys. And you touched on this a little bit, too, is giving them some responsibilities, right? I know they said, you know, a dog is, you know, man's best friend, but and cats, of course.
And your wife has got a big burden on taking care of them, too, of course.
Oh, my God, my wife, believe me.
And my wife, too.
She was out this morning while I was getting ready, working out, walking the dog. So, but on a serious note, I mean, there's a lot of benefits. What do you see, Roger? Because, listen, you've had a lot of pets. You've owned them. You've fostered them. You've been around pets for a long time. What's your perspective and your wonderful volunteers on the benefits of these beautiful cats and dogs?
Well, one easy thing to say, and again, it's personal, is, you know, everybody has those health monitoring apps on their phones, right? About half of my steps per day are because I'm walking a dog. So I'm getting my exercise in because I'm out walking the dog. But it's well known that families that own pets live longer. And it's also well known that from a blood pressure perspective, just sitting there petting a dog or a cat typically lowers somebody's blood pressure. So that's a health benefit that's, you know, well beyond what you would imagine.
Interesting. And, you know, I've also noticed, what's your perspective on your overall mood? You know, let's say you come home, you had a rough day at the office, whatever it might be, and then you see the dog. The dog, no matter what, let's say, your relationship is with your kids or your wife or your husband, the dog's happy to see you, right? So what's that like? Because you've been around a lot of pets. You know, that interaction between the animals, the cats and dogs, beautiful pets, and the owner. What's that like?
It's pretty special. And I had one of my fosters along the way who I ended up adopting. By the way, if you're a foster and you adopt your foster, the term is called foster failing. It's not a failure. You didn't fulfill the foster requirement of get him adopted and go get another one. You fostered a dog, and he bonded with me so well. Charlie Bones is my dog. Was my dog. He's passed. He came into my life, and he was my dog. And his whole life revolved around, what's Dad doing now? So if I'm out in the yard doing yard work, if he's not out there with me, he's in the window looking to see where I am, front, back, side of the house, he's there. But he was my guy, my buddy, my heart dog, if you will. You know, my special heart dog. So that's really special. So he was all about me. Now, my current dog, Gracie, is my wife's dog. If my wife is out and she comes home, she's all excited. When I come home, if my wife's already home, if I just come home, I barely get her to look up. I'd have to open a cheese stick or slice up an apple, and then all of a sudden I'm her best friend. But me just coming home doesn't do it. Now, when my wife comes home, she goes and runs and gets a stuffy, because she's a golden retriever. They got to meet you with something. Gets one of her stuffies and comes running to the door. And you can barely open the door because she's there with her big-ass stuffy blocking the way. So it's really special, though. Most dogs really do appreciate it when you come home. My daughter adopted a dog from 11th Hour Rescue, and that dog just loves everybody. And so when we go visit, she comes running down the hallway to come greet everyone who comes through the door. So
there is a special feeling, though, when you have that bond. And I was also researching, which was also very intriguing to me, is the vets. Some of the vets are coming back, these incredible, brave men and women who have served our great country, and they're traumatized from the experience. And having a vet with a dog or a cat has lifted their emotional spirits and brightened their outlook on life. What about the emotional benefits have you seen over the many years? If someone's depressed or someone, you know, is going through a hard time, and that interaction with the pet?
Well, like I said before, we, you know, rescue dogs and save people, and save people, rescue dogs. It's really true. Those that are struggling at all and need some companionship or just want that life around the house, that animal makes a big difference.
Right. I also know, like, in the morning when I'm getting ready to go to the office, I'm heading in, there's a lot of people jogging with their dogs, and they're walking with their dogs, and they're interacting with their dogs, and they're out in nature. And that's probably highly therapeutic as well.
Well, I live in a very a suburban community. You know, it's a very it's a development. And one thing I noticed during COVID, I'm sitting there in my office, which faces the front of the house, working on a computer. I saw more people walking. I never saw some of these dogs before. So these people are out there walking their dogs extensively during that COVID period. I don't see them as much anymore, but it always struck me as very interesting how many people have dogs in the neighborhood. And my neighborhood is populated with a lot of 11th hour rescue dogs, but other dogs as well. So it's just really cool to see everybody out and about. And when you have a dog and you're walking them, you know, the person who's out of town for the week, you know, you see that Amazon package on their front, you know, you see that, and you contact them and you pull the package off the front door for them. You know, it's just, you're closer to your neighbors when you're out walking that dog, especially when they have a dog. You know, it's a good time to meet and greet all your neighbor friends out there.
You know, that's another interesting point as well for the folks that have a dog or cow, especially the dogs. When you're walking the dogs in the neighborhood, you're meeting more neighbors.
You do.
You're also not only getting more of a workout physically, but I think you feel more part of the community because your feet are on the ground, and instead of just driving all over the place, you're walking and you're getting a feel of the neighborhood. That's an interesting benefit. The other thing that was kind of interesting to me was there are a lot of pet lovers out there, and when I was getting ready for the show and I heard I was going to have the great honor of having you come on, I was like, there's a lot of, in our neighborhood, a lot of pet owners. Now, I'm not sure about all the cat owners because
they're indoors.
But yep. The dogs themselves, and when I know our little dogs outside barking, whatever the dog's doing, throwing the Frisbee around, our dog loves the Frisbee. Our little pup, this German Shepherd, Shadow, this could be like in the World Cup. This is a very good soccer
really?
Player. Yeah, pretty
awesome.
Good soccer
awesome.
Player. So, let's talk about where you are in your journey, Roger. Okay, it's Sunday morning, and thank you again for driving almost an hour to be here. It means a lot, taking time out. But I know
my pleasure.
There's a lot of incredible volunteers out here. Glad we're putting the spotlight on you and the wonderful volunteers and the organization. What about your life and what you've been enriched by being involved in something that's not just focused on yourself?
Well, I do find it very rewarding, and you... You can easily look at it on the individual basis, right? That individual dog, that individual cat, you've saved their life and transitioned them on to an adoption. On the macro side, everybody doing what they're doing, again, that has an impact. You hate to be cold about the business side of the business, but it is about inventory turns if you want to be cold. Get them in, get them out, get them in, get them out. And why? Because you're relieving that pressure at those overkill shelters all over the country. And you're helping these pets that otherwise wouldn't have a chance. There's so many wonderful pets that just need that second chance. Whether it's a dog or a cat, they just need that second chance. And it's so nice to bring them into a home that that you know they're going to get loved in. It's very rewarding.
And what about, you know, the volunteers when you and these all these wonderful people come together for a common bond? Now, you mentioned you have a big event coming up at Horseshoe Lake. And you get like 5,000 local residents showing up for a wonderful cause. What's that like between you and the volunteers when you think about Linda Schiller and her legacy and where the organization is now?
So at Puptoberfest, that big event in the fall, one of the things Linda Schiller always wanted was to have our memory lane. And it's a big tent, and every year we have to get a bigger tent. And we have posters made up of pictures of all the dogs and cats that have come through our rescue since the beginning. Now, some of the beginning is a little light on details. We don't have all of them. But in the last 10 years, we have pretty solid posters of all the dogs and cats that have come through. And it's kind of a special thing to just walk through that memory lane and just look at the volume of animals that have been saved. And it's kind of fun to go find your dog or cat that you adopted along the way and find his picture and put a little post-it up on it. But that was Linda Schiller's vision right from the start, to have this memory lane, and it's something we've carried on that tradition forever. And I think we always will, because it's a special thing at that particular event.
What is the future of the 11th Hour Rescue? Where do you see it? I mean, you've been involved since 2009. It's been doing wonderful things, saving rescuing animals,
thousands,
cats,
thousands,
saving lives, bringing people's lives more fulfilling and changing their trajectory. Where's the future going, you think, at 11th Hour Rescue?
I think it's more of the same. You know, we always look for opportunities to broaden our reach, whether it's social media. You know, if you haven't liked us on Facebook, like us on Facebook and Instagram. We're always looking to broaden our reach, get more people involved, more volunteers involved. The more volunteers, the more fosters, the more dogs, the more cats. It's really give me more, give me more, give me more. Our new facility in Flanders, which we've been in just over a year, has been a good opportunity for us to solidify where our home base really is. And that's been important to us.
Is that the Nelson family?
Yeah.
They were involved. Well, God bless them, too.
Yeah, they owned Wagontail's Kennel, and Dan wanted to retire. And, you know, he known about us. He boarded a lot of our, you know, adopters' dogs over the years, so he certainly knew about us. And he reached out to us and said, hey, buy my kennel. And it took a while to make all the arrangements and get through all the town process, but we did. And we're really happy to be there. It's really worked out well.
Well, like I said, it's just such an incredible honor, Roger, for you to come on and share the story, not just 11th Hour Rescue and Linda Schiller and Daniel the Miracle Beagle and all the processes involved, but folks like you are making a difference in the world. You're not just saving these beautiful animals, the cats, the dogs, but you're saving lives. You're changing lives. And you really are what we're talking about on the show, on the journey of getting back. For the listeners, one of the important things at the 11th Hour Rescue, they're not going to stop until all the cages are empty. So think about that. If you love cats and dogs and you're not sure if you want to get involved and opt to adopt, at least go check it out. Contact Roger, the wonderful people there. I want to leave you with a few thoughts. You know, when I was thinking about my closing for the show, I was thinking about Linda Schiller. Like I said, I wish I met her because I love people that are passionate, that are making a difference. When she knew there was a need, she solved it. She said, I want all these pets. 20 pets from Georgia came, and she changed so many lives in the process. But she also believed in people like we do, like I do. We are an amazing bunch of folks. The community is really wonderful. And their people are good. They're not bad. Don't think they're bad. They're really good. That if you want to help, you can find a way to help people. You can find a way to make a difference in this world. You just need to know how to do it. Whatever it is. If you love cats and dogs, contact the 11th Hour Rescue. If you love kids, get involved. Help other children. If someone's battling cancer, help those folks. If you have talents and lives and your gifts, use them. Don't forget about you can change the world. Please remember that. You can change the world. Make a decision. Step up and your life will be changed for the better. God bless you and please tune in next week. Enjoy this wonderful weather today. Take care.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.